Hello and welcome to the Energy Talk Podcast. My name is Olubunmi Olajide and thank you so much for making time for the episode again this week. I'm really excited for this one and I hope you've been having a fantastic week. Today we're going to be speaking with Godwin Wangele, who is currently a Rhodes Scholar studying at the University of Oxford. And today, honestly, it's just going to be focusing on his personal story and his personal experiences growing up and getting involved in the energy sector and now being at Oxford. So I hope you learned something from this as I did and enjoy the conversation.
Okay, my name is Godwin Wangele. I'm Nigerian from the southeastern part of Nigeria, from Ebonyi State to be precise. So I was born in Jos, Plateau State, so a family of five people. Find myself somewhere in the middle, so I'm like the third child. I have an older brother, an older sister, and then a younger sister and a younger brother in that order. I spent the first 14 to 15 years of my life in Jos, and you know, like as a kid growing up, there was always this thing about when, if you grew up in Nigeria, you would know what we call NEPA. So there was always this thing about when NEPA brings the light in quotes, then everybody's like, hey, off NEPA. And then, I mean, it was one fascinating experience for me. I kept asking myself why it has to be like that, especially trying to see what is happening in other places and realizing that it doesn't quite apply in a lot of places. And then again, my dad was also like a businessman, so his business relied so much on electricity. And then what it meant is that my livelihood was almost directly linked to how much power we had access to. So I picked interest in studying energy as a result of all these things. And that's what led me to study electrical engineering in my undergrad at the University of Nigeria in Nsukka. While I was there, I met with a number of like-minded people who were also interested in the energy discourse. And then all of us agreed to set up a company called GreenEdge Technologies. And then what GreenEdge was supposed to do, basically, was to see how we can be able to bridge the energy gap in Nigeria. So one of the major concerns, one of the major challenges we identified was that most of the energy products that you can imagine are imported. So I did a bit of my IT at the Transmission Company of Nigeria. And the situation that you will find there is quite alarming. So there are some very sensitive electrical equipment that when they get damaged, they have to wait for engineers from India to come and fix them up. So that was quite frightening for me. And then I thought we should start doing something here to be able to awaken the spirit of Nigeria to solve her problems, you understand? So yeah, that led us to start GreenEdge Technologies. GreenEdge was started for two reasons. One is to be able to bridge the gap, that is the geographical gap in solving the energy problem, because you can't keep importing everything. Then the second reason is to be able to bring down the cost of energy. So having looked at the Nigerian landscape, I realized that the problem of energy cannot just be solved by the government. Depending on the government for it is like, it's a far-fetched assumption, especially with the current structure of the government. And then I don't believe in just complaining about things and not doing anything. So we had to like think of a better solution to our problem. And then we said, okay, if we can do something that's going to reduce the cost, and then at the same time, help the country to save foreign exchange, then that's going to be good. And then also at the same time, grow the local expertise in the sector. So that's how we started. Kept moving forward, kept advancing from just producing energy products like inverters and charge controllers to actually deploying solar systems in a number of places. And then the whole period was really, really exciting. The company is still existing now. I haven't worked in GreenEdge for about 3 years. I got to realize again that, you know, we learn every day. So I'm this kind of person that I study my environment and then see what's lacking and then try to look for how to fix it. So I got to realize that just my experience in GreenEdge was not enough to actually change the world, that I needed to be able to build more network, and I needed also to widen my knowledge about energy, because it's not just about engineering, it's not just about being able to install systems, there's a lot of social implications and a lot of economic implications to all these things. So that led me to seek to study at the University of Oxford. And then I saw the opportunity to become a Rhodes Scholar. I applied to them and they liked what I was doing and they made me a Rhodes Scholar, and then that's how I'm here to be as a student at Oxford studying energy systems currently, with the sole aim of being able to, you know, finish here and be totally equipped with the skills I require to make good policies, and then bringing those skills, knowledge, and then the network back to Africa and using it to effect changes in the energy sector. So, and then one of the bits I've probably missed out in everything I've been saying is the issue of climate change. But I usually prefer to suppress that a bit when I'm talking about Africa, because, you know, you have to count your needs one after the other. So it's only someone who is living or who is able to feed himself that will begin to talk about other problems. So, but then again, the goal of using renewable energy to solve all these things is an indication that we're just trying to leapfrog. We're trying to make sure that we solve both problems at the same time, solve the problems of climate change and the problems of energy access.
You took liberties and rushed over a lot of details, so I'm going to like backtrack a lot here. I think first, for context, how old were you and your co-founders by the time you started GreenAge?
Okay, I was about 21 years old at the time.
Yeah, and this was while you were still a full-time student. You were still pursuing your bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Is that correct?
Yes, I was in final year at the time.
And how was that like? Because the gap that you chose to kind of address in the market is, you mentioned that a lot of the products are imported, and there's a very good reason for that, because manufacturing is a very capital intensive sector to be in. So did you guys understand the challenge that you're trying to solve when you went into it, or is this something that you kind of learned as you went along?
Yeah, we understood the challenges when we were about getting into it, and then we also learned more about the challenges. So yeah, in as much as manufacturing is quite capital intensive, we also realized that we could still produce it cheaper than what it is sold for here, like way cheaper. And then, like, from our initial analysis, definitely we could sell products at 30% lower than the market, which we achieved. So, but then the issue of capital came when there's now a need to scale up, because, you know, you're competing against people who are shipping these products in their thousands, and then you're just making it in tens. So it becomes a bit difficult for you to scale up as a company that wants to have a global face or a global image. So while companies in other parts of the world are able to raise finance in millions of dollars, in Nigeria is totally different. And then they also have like the other day I was talking to my prof here, and I was asking him what the way of getting finance from the bank is, and apparently they don't need any collateral security, just you insure your loans with your business. Do you understand? So yeah, in Nigeria we don't have such opportunities. But then my dad used to tell me that in Igbo, he said Adeb Korumba Buarog. So what it means is that you won't say that because people die in a war, then you won't defend yourself in a fight when someone is attacking you.
That's a very wise saying. And I actually want to go deeper into this financial issue, because it's something that we've had someone talk about impact investing on the podcast before, and we know how much of a challenge, especially when it comes to renewable energy sector, attracting substantial investment. So what was it like really attracting those investments, and what kind of institutions did you find that really supported you in that early stage?
Initially, there were some people who really were instrumental, people who believed in what we were doing, like Professor Linus Opara, who was Africa's best scientist in 2016. Institutions like the South, South and Southeast Angel Investment Network, a company like Tennessee Professional Services Limited, which is one of the biggest IT or tech companies in Nigeria. And then eventually we got to meet with USADF, and then they were also interested in what we were doing. So these are some of the institutions and people that we've worked with, you know, over the years, as a result of the kind of ideas that we came up with and the fact that they were also impressed by them. It was quite challenging in the beginning. You know, it's like when you start off something totally new, it's more difficult to convince the first person than it is to convince the second person. That's exactly what happened. But then I believe that as time went on, people were able to believe more in our proposition. I wouldn't say it's not challenging. It is very challenging because, you know, all the amount of money you can be able to raise there to start off such a company is actually not enough for you to set up a real process plan. But then we just thought that we have to try to make impact in the little way we can, which is exactly what we did and which is what we have been doing, and which is why I'm here also to see how possibilities to scale that impact to a much more bigger scale.
I would like to talk about the risks involved as well, because when you got out of school, you went immediately towards the entrepreneurship route. I know you mentioned that your dad was also a businessman, so that have like really large influence in your decision making around that point. And how did you manage the risk, or did you feel pressure that when you graduate from school to get like a real job in quotes?
Okay, so basically growing up, I never understood the meaning of having a paycheck. So my dad did not work for anybody all the while I was alive, neither did my mom. So I never really thought much about working for anybody. So it was basically like a dream to just start off and work on my own. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do. And that's actually very interesting, because I think that mindset is a lot different from how regular people think about it. Usually the regular part is go to school, get good grades, get a job and not have to worry about that. But you obviously took a very different route to that.
Yeah, it was quite challenging, I won't even lie. But then I liked it because I felt I was young at the time. And that was the time when I had to make as much mistakes as I could. So even if it fails, then, I mean, it's a worthy experience. But then it turned out it wasn't quite a bad decision at all, because I believe that most times when you want to do something, you just have to be able to summon courage to do it. Because when you do it that way, then it's either you fail or you succeed, but then it depends on how you interpret failure. So if you interpret failure as an opportunity to learn, then yes, it's success in both ways.
I guess this is a perfect time to transition to talk about the Rhodes Scholarship and the impact that has had. But I think let's just start from the beginning. The Rhodes Scholarship is a very competitive and a very exhaustive selection process. So how did you first hear about it, and just walk us through the timeline from you first learning about the program and applying to a final selection and you finding out that you got accepted into the fellowship?
Rhodes Scholarship was an interesting one. I didn't know much about it, I won't lie to you. I got the information about the scholarship from my brother. So, you know, in the information about all these things are usually kind of, I mean, I feel like if you are in the US, for instance, your school is already bringing you up to know that there are opportunities out there. But then in Nigeria, it's totally different. So my brother was in France at the time, so he got the link and then he sent it to me. I sent in my application to Rhodes, I think, on the deadline day. So, yeah. Because, I mean, for me, it was something, the odds were really low at the time, because one, I was just at the age, that was the age limit. So if I hadn't gotten it last year, then I can't apply for a Rhodes Scholarship again, because the age limit was 25, yeah? And then I also knew that they were going to select only one person from West Africa. Mind you, West Africa had 18 countries in it. So you see that the odds were really, really low. And it was something that I didn't want to get really anxious about. So I just sent in my application. And then a few months later, they sent me a message that I was longlisted amongst 145. So I've been able to see, I mean, to change the proportion or the probability of occurrence from one in millions to one in 145. And then they asked a few questions, which I responded to. And then next thing they said, I've been shortlisted amongst 45. Then at that stage, there was an online interview. And then I got a message that I was shortlisted amongst 25. And then another process. And then they called me up for the finalist interview of 10 people. It was quite an experience, because all the 10 people were very smart people. Four of them came from outside Nigeria. One of them was already a graduate from Oxford. And I think three people came in from the US. Then the other people were mainly Nigerians and Ghanaians on the top 10. Everybody had very impressive, you know, profiles. So, I mean, even if I were a judge, it would have been difficult for me to pick somebody amongst everybody there. But then it was quite a wonderful process. You know, we spent 3 days all together with the other finalists, with the judges. We had dinners together. We all interacted on what our passions were, what we wanted to do, the kind of things that interest us and all of that. And then after all of that process, there was the final interview, which was quite intense, about 30 minutes in front of, I mean, a very powerful panel of like 10 people, including professors from around the world and businessmen who have succeeded, and then other leaders from around the world also. So basically, it's more like you being able to present yourself and your case to them and how you intend to improve things in Africa and around the world. So it was really cool. It was a good experience, actually. And then being selected as the leader was quite elating. I can't even hide how good I felt, you know, that day, because I felt like, wow, this is really nice. It's something that is worth celebrating. But then it took me a few days to actually believe that I was the winner of the road. Yeah, I mean, from where I came from, especially, it was quite an achievement. I didn't know any Rhodes Scholar before I won the Rhodes Scholarship. It was after getting the Rhodes Scholarship that I got to meet all the Rhodes Scholars from my constituency and from other constituencies around the world. So it was something I never dreamt of, being a Rhodes Scholar, even though I always dreamt of being a student of top schools in the world. On my radar was Harvard, Stanford, and Oxford. So I think that was pretty much nature's way of making it happen. So it was a really, really good experience.
Just to kind of close out that chapter before we go into our next point, where were you and how did you find out that you were the winner of the selection process?
Okay, so we all went to Lagos. That was where the interviews were held. And then in Lagos there, we basically or typically got the results immediately after the interviews. We were all there until the night of that day. So after everybody had been interviewed, all the judges sat down together and tabulated everything. And then they came out, you know, to select the winner. And then they called all of us into the room and then they announced top three and then they announced the winner. It was quite intense. It was scary, you know, being in the midst of everybody, you know, tension was there. Then at the end of the day, when I was announced, we all hugged each other, exchanged pleasantries. I think we even became closer friends after that process. And then it was really rewarding because at the end of the day, I'm currently in Oxford with the person who came second and with the lady who came third also. So they got other funding from Clarendon and Commonwealth, and then one of us also got into Stanford as a Knight Hennessy Scholar. So I must say the whole road selection process was a really wonderful one where I met some of the best thought leaders I'll probably ever know in my life.
Like our final point potentially, because we are running out of time, let's just go to a local level about Nigeria, for instance. Let's just really focus on Nigeria. You mentioned initially that one of your primary motivations, and I think it's a motivation that every Nigerian really shares and can relate to, is the problem that there is not that steady power supply in the country, even though the country has had a lot of natural petroleum resources for many years, but it's still a problem that has remained largely unsolved. And right now we are moving towards, as SDG 7, the decade of action, to have like universal energy access and all that. There's so many initiatives, and I think right now this has been the largest time when there are conversations around energy, and I'm sure that you've noticed this as well. How do you really see the role of young people in this transition? Because you have taken a very unconventional path, and as you said, it's taken a lot of bravery and a lot of risk taking. So you mentioned that there are a lot of spaces that need to be filled, but I'd just like you to just give an advice. If it's for, like, imagining you were speaking to yourself a few years ago, what advice would you give for someone who wanted to get into the space and find where they can fit into, so addressing the many problems that energy still needs to be solved in the African context and specifically in Nigeria?
So generally, I totally agree that the youths should be able to rise up and solve some of the basic challenges that we have. I disagree with the role of government as a lot of people see it. I want to believe that the government should be more of a regulatory body and we shouldn't keep depending on government for everything. I believe that if people work hard, I mean, in as much as policies are going to make the fruits of your work to be more felt, but then if you have a larger critical mass of people who are really working towards something, then it's going to be a lot easier to even change the government. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like it's going to be a really, really wonderful thing to have a lot of people, like to have a lot of people who are interested in energy, who are willing to play in the discourse on climate in a lot of ways, because there are a lot of ways in which you can engage, you know, something as very little as being able to collect waste properly and then using collected waste to generate other things like energy or to recycle. All these are things that are going to improve both your economy, the economy of the nation, and then also be able to save the climate. So I think that there are a lot of niches that people can play into or people can tap into. I understand that there is a lot of challenges about being able to assess, you know, good impact investments around these things. But then I also feel that in as much as impact investment is a challenge, you can't get impact investments if you don't have a viable solution. So yeah. Most times when people complain about money for business, I keep telling them that so money is usually not the first problem. Because if you have a very good, strong, you know, idea, then it's like you have already gone 50% into the solution, and then you can be able to solve the problem easier. So I would want to charge the youths and all the other people in Nigeria, I mean, not just youths, to be able to think more about how we can be able to solve our problems, you know, and not just depend on government. So if we keep depending on the government, then we are not going anywhere, because so see how this cycle works. So for you to be able to break into the government, you should have some reasonable impact. Mm-hmm. And then if it's only when you are there that you can understand maybe some of the challenges that they face and you can be able to fix it. So my proposition is that we should be able to try and see how we can do things to create wealth. So while we create more wealth for both ourselves and everybody, we can be able to, you know, have the liberty of mind to choose proper government. Because one of the problems we're having currently is that people are so poor that whenever an election comes, the government just simply gives them little amount of money and they vote for them. So if people get wealthier and more knowledgeable, then that is not going to happen again. So what is going to happen is that so it's going to create a kind of cycle where you have positive feedback. So improved economy is going to lead to improved government, and improved government to lead to more improved economy, and then it keeps going like that until the economy and the government becomes really, really stable. So in as much as I understand that the government plays a very important role, I also believe that we also play an important role, because if we're able to grow the critical mass of people who are problem solvers in our society, then the government will literally have no choice, because what's going to happen is that there's going to be a big wave of change and it's going to overwhelm whomsoever it is that is not willing for change to happen. So yeah, I'm charging the youth, myself, you inclusive, and every other person, to step up our game and see how we can be able to change the narrative of Nigeria.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. I really had a fantastic time speaking with Godwin. One of the big advantages of the podcast is I get to speak with really amazing people quite frequently, and it's something that I really do not take for granted. So if you did enjoy the episode, please share with a friend or a colleague, and don't forget to join us next week for another episode of The Energy Talk. And also, we've had a surge of listenership from the country of India. So to all our listeners from India, thank you so much for tuning in every single week and continue to support the podcast. Please feel free to reach out to me as well. We have an email and you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn. You can just type in my name, Olubunmi Olajide, and I'll always be excited to hear back from you. I hope you all have a wonderful week and enjoy the rest of your day.